You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Come on, let's go. Working it out. Yeah. Just like you. Ready? All right, that's enough music. That's all I got. All right. Whew. That's 5 tons. Not metric tons. I don't even know what that means. These are like straight up American tons. All 5 of them. So, why am I actually out of breath? Imagine with me for a moment, right, that you, I don't know, that you grew up in a cave, that you lived in a cave, and sorry, my Klingon is coming out here too with this headband on my veins. Anyway, imagine you lived in a cave and you never met like an American human from the 21st century, and someday you come out of your cave and you meet someone, and they tell you about how they live life. And they say, yeah, you know, I like to work out. And you're like, well, what does that mean? That you're like outside and you do work? He's like, no, I take weights, I pick them up, and I put them back down. Like, and there's a commercial for that, Planet Fitness, about 15 years ago. But like, so they're like, okay, so what do you do with the weight? Like, you know, I just pick it up. Okay, where do you put it? Where it was. Okay. I do different types of weights. Sometimes I lift things with my legs. Oh, so that you can push them somewhere. No, just to put them back down. And I'll lay on my back and I'll push things up. And okay, and so that's so I can just put them back down. And of course, the idea of that sounds kind of weird, right? Or imagine you're like, hey, I'm getting on a treadmill because I'm going to run. And they're like, oh, where are you going? Well, nowhere. But dude, I put in 3 miles yesterday. 3 miles to somewhere? No, just 3 miles. It's just going. Or you get on your exercise bike and you're there and you're pedaling away or spinning. Maybe you spin, you don't cycle. And you're spinning and you're going and you're getting nowhere. And how that sounds really weird, right? Like, so seriously, if you were explaining that to someone that grew up in a cave, that would sound really, really strange. And this isn't really my scene, but maybe you're like, hey, let me tell you about this thing called Botox. And what it is like, I want to look younger. I want my skin to be firmer. So I inject myself with botulism. That's what it is, Botox. Botulism toxin, so that your face actually swells up from the reaction. And they're like, why would you do that? Why would you lift up weights and put them back down? Why would you get on a treadmill? And why would you do Botox? I don't know, but that's your thing. But why would you do that? And of course, you know, the issue is to get into shape. And there's a phrase that often comes, especially if you're going into that scene of, I lift things up and put them back down. There is a phrase that you probably know that goes like this. No pain, no pain, no gain, right? And so the idea of working out or lifting things or running on a treadmill that gets you nowhere or riding a bike that gets you nowhere is because you're doing something hard for the sake of something better. You with me on that? That I do not enjoy working out. I do not really enjoy at all running on the treadmill. But I do it because, you know, 2 years ago I had a heart attack and I'm pushing 50. And, you know, these are things that people need to do to stay in shape. And so I do that not because I want to, but because I should, because it's good for me. And sometimes we endure pain, and I don't know how Botox fits into that little category there, but sometimes we endure pain for the sake of something better. And we're going to see that this morning. We're doing this series called Through the Eyes of John, and I'll explain more about that and that amazing backdrop and what that means. But I want you to understand, and we'll come back to it, is that sometimes we do hard things because there is something better at stake. And that's true with so many things. I mean, you put up with a hard job. It's difficult. Why? Well, because it pays the bills and puts food on your table. You know, there's a lot of things that we do that are difficult, and we do them because there's something better in store. And so we'll come back to this idea. I'm going to take off the headband because, yeah. But I want to talk to you about this idea and what the series is all about, this idea of through the eyes of John, and then we'll come back to the no pain, no gain. And I want to start with a little introduction that I'm calling Same Eyes. And that'll make sense in a little bit. But same eyes. And the Bible, more specifically the New Testament, more specifically the story of Jesus, was written by four different authors. And we call those first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. And you just stay, I'll lead you, okay, Kara, on these. We call those four books the Gospels. And we did a series last year called Breaking News that was about the good news, the euangelion, which is the Greek word for good news or gospel, because the news of the gospel is good. The news is good news. And again, I've shared last year when we did that series, and you can find that on our slideshow, Luke. But the good news, originally the euangelion, again, it's a Greek word, referred to as a messenger. And I referred to a messenger, and they were the ones that would bring news. And if the news was good, the messenger would get paid well. You know, sort of like, you know, your DoorDash, they come to your door, and it is warm, and it is piping hot, because that's what it's supposed to be. I don't know why, but that's what it is, like a piper. Piping hot, and you're like, hey, you get a good tip. But if they're late, and the food isn't warm, and it looks like they stopped off to eat a couple bites of it, and then, you know, came to your house, you'd be like, no, you don't get a good tip. You don't get a good reward. You don't get a euangelion. And so this word became known for not just the message, but the joy, the benefit of this message. And so we have these four views called Gospels, the four Gospel accounts, and they are four perspectives on the life of Jesus. And so there are four gospel authors. And again, you probably know them, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And why don't we turn the house lights on here, because we're going to need them in just a moment. And these four authors, writing about the same story, had four specific audiences in mind. And we'll talk about that. But these four gospel authors had four gospel audiences, four different groups to whom they were writing. So before we go any further, I need four volunteers. do we have a Matthew in the house? Anybody named Matthew here right now? No? Okay, I need someone to pretend to be Matthew. You're not going to do anything but just stand up here and answer some questions that are easy questions. So I need a volunteer. So now you will volunteer. Okay, thank you. Okay, come on the stage. Mark, I need a Mark. Someone be a Mark for me. Is not hard. You're not doing anything embarrassing. I just need some help. Come on, help me out here. Seriously. We're going to keep you till 11:50. We're keeping you to noon. All right. I got a Mark. I got a Matthew, Mark, Luke. I need a Luke. Is there a Luke in the house? Hey, there is a Luke in the house. Can you come on up here, Luke? Please? Thank you. All right, good. We got a Luke. And then I know there's a lots of Johns in the house, not referring to the broken one in the men's room. John, is there a John in the house? He's Jonathan, okay? If not, there's no H in his name, by the way, if you spell it wrong. If you write it in the elders' email, it's J-O-N, for short for Jonathan. All right, good. Now, each of you can take one of these, one of those. Here you go, here you go, here you go. All right, each of you can get a a pen. Get it, pass that one down if you wouldn't mind. Marker. And then here's an eraser if you need one, if you get that. Okay, so would you please do me a favor? Turn it vertical. Yeah, that way. Turn it portrait mode. And then write 1 to 10 down the side. It doesn't have to be. No one's going to see your work, so it doesn't matter if it's sloppy. I'll come back here. Okay. All right, what I want you to do is you are all, and don't look at your neighbors, you're going to describe 10 different things that you see in this room. Okay? John, turn around. You're going to describe 10 different things that you see in this room. Okay? So that's it. That's your assignment. Just they don't have to be fancy. You could just... They can't use this one now, but you could say there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lights on the ceiling. Like, it's nothing complicated, just easy answer, easy 10 different things you see in this room. It could be about the person that you were sitting next to. It could be about something going on the back there. It could be that Chris is totally asleep. No, just kidding. it could be anything that you notice in this room. 10 different things. Don't overthink it. Oh, man. Oh, just 10 things you see in this room. Anything you see. You're thinking too much. Don't think too much. How are we doing? All right, we're at 9 over here. We're at 8. I'm not looking at your paper. How are you done? You got 10? Okay. And you have to see it, by the way. You can't just invent what you think is there. Well, then you would see that too. Like, we don't know what Levi is drinking there. It could be coffee. It could be Mountain Dew. It could just be air. He just wants to look cool. You got 10, John? All right, John, you can turn back around. You have 10? You have 10? All right, you keep going. Keep going. Just look, man. This is a room full of things. You're overthinking it. See, look, he just raised his hand. There's a guy with his hand in the air. All right, you're going to keep going. So why don't we start down here? Why don't you share the 10 things? Go slowly because we want to just check your work to make sure you're not lying. Okay, tell 10 things that you see.
Hat.
A hat. Where's the hat? Okay, there's a hat. All right, good. People, where are they? Okay, good. We got that one.
What?
A chair. Okay, there's that chair specifically. Okay.
Tommy.
Tommy. There's Tommy, all right.
Shoe.
A shoe. Okay, there are shoes here. Okay. A speaker, all right. Oh, I see what he did there. Speaker and speaker. Whoa.
Stage.
TV, all right. Piano. Okay, now, did any of you have any of those same things? You did. What did you have? It was the same. You have Tommy. Okay, so Tommy is popular.
Chair.
Chair, okay. And TV, okay. And stage. I don't know, We'll come back to you. Well, you can just check it out. Okay, what have you got?
I didn't like this. I described it.
Okay, all right.
Beautiful.
Okay, it's beautiful. What's beautiful?
Wife.
Okay, good. Good answer. All right. Good answer. Except that it's really my wife.
Okay. Young.
Young. Okay, who's young? Okay, all right.
Bright light.
Okay, all right.
Foggy.
All right, yep. Technically, it's called haze. That's what I'm told. Like, it's not fog, it's haze. They're going to beat you up from the back in the sound booth.
Shiny.
Is that my head? Or your head? All right. All right. Did you guys have any of that? Nope. All right. Luke, what have you got that we didn't already say? We got your whole list, right? Okay. All right. You had people, all right? Water bottle. Okay. Where's the water bottle? Okay. There's a water bottle. Okay, good. A hand. All right, you saw that hand? Okay. And that was the rest?
Hair.
Okay, so shiny or hair, whoever you're looking at. all right. Now, John, you were facing that way. What did you write down?
Light.
Okay.
Drums.
All right.
Electrical.
Okay, hold on 1 second there. Did any of you guys have drums? Did you see drums? No, you didn't. So is John lying? But John saw something that those three didn't see. Why would that be? Okay, John, keep going. What did you say?
Wood.
All right.
Metal.
Plastic. Do you know what he does for a living?
Water.
Where did you see water? Oh, like a water bottle. Okay. All right.
Rug.
A rug. Okay, did you guys see a rug? No. But John did. Now, is John wrong? Or are they wrong? Maybe they're wrong. Okay, all right.
Headphones.
Did you guys see headphones? No. All right, where did you see the headphones? Oh, yeah, they're back there. There are some on my shirt here. Yeah.
Chair.
And a chair. All right, where did you see a chair?
Oh, chair.
Okay, no, that, it's, I was just going to say, it's not fog, it's haze, and it's not a chair, it's a throne. Because drummers have a throne. How do they feel about themselves, huh? Where are those drummers? Anyway, so here's the issue. You've got four different people describing the same scene. And what you're going to see in the four Gospels, which, by the way, we talked about this in the Word, the sequel series. We went into this a little bit more in depth. You can find that on the loop as well. But you had four different authors describing things from their four perspectives. And were any of these guys wrong? No. Were they different? Yes. And so a lot of times when people look at the Gospels, like, well, how come John put that in there, but Matthew didn't? How come Luke said that, but Mark didn't? It's because they were writing from their own perspective of what they saw. And as we're going to see in a moment, just so you know, John, who happens to be John, the author of the Gospel of John, he wrote from a pretty different perspective than the other three. And yet it was still the same story. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for your help. Why don't we give them a round of applause for coming up front and being willing to do that. And it's all right. You don't have to clean it off. I know someone that will make clean it off later. All right. Pen. Okay. Pens, all that stuff there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So there are four different authors writing for four different audiences. And so now let me break down what those are so you can understand why we're talking about through the eyes of John. Because John's perspective is a little bit different than the rest of the gospel authors. So first of all, the first author we've got, of course, for the first gospel in your New Testament is Matthew. And these are not in chronological order. These are in biblical order. So if you zoom through the list on YouVersion, you'll see Matthew. And then you've got Mark is the second author. The third one is Matthew, Mark, Luke. And then you've got, of course, John. So there's your four New Testament gospel authors. And the gospel being the good news, meaning the euangelion they're writing about is the life of Jesus. They're writing about his story. And so that's why they're called gospels, where Acts isn't considered a gospel. Although Acts technically is Luke part 2. It's the sequel to Luke. I don't know if you knew that. But Matthew, when he was writing, Matthew, you probably know Matthew by the name Matthew. You might know him by another name, and that name would be Levi. And not that Levi. But Matthew, also known as Levi, used to be a tax collector. He worked for the Roman authorities. He was hated, just like Levi. No. but he was working for the Roman authorities. And so he was a tax collector, and Jesus called him. He comes to follow Jesus. And Matthew, knowing the Jewish audience, knowing his cultural heritage, which is why tax collectors were hated, because they were sellouts, and we don't have time to get into that. But a tax collector was a Jewish person working for the Romans, and nobody liked the Romans because they were the empire. They came in and conquered with violence and force. And someone working on behalf of them as a Jewish person was a sellout. And so Matthew, that was his story. But he actually wrote, because of that, he wrote to Jews. And we'll see what that means as far as his writing. So he was writing to Jewish people. As a Jewish person, his primary audience was writing to Jewish people. And that'll make sense in a moment. Now, Mark was a little bit different. And by the way, Matthew was an eyewitness of this story. And he wrote his gospel a little bit earlier on in the story, or in the chronology, if you will. Mark was not an eyewitness. He wasn't specifically there. Mark was his kind of his surname, what he was called, but his full name was John Mark. And we actually meet John Mark in the book of Acts because John Mark was a missionary with Peter. And so John Mark and Peter served together on missionary journeys, and many experts believe that he wrote his gospel because he listened to all the stories that Peter told him, because Peter was an eyewitness. And so Mark wrote to, but he wasn't from there, he wasn't in the area, and he wrote to Romans. He wrote to the people that were Roman, and what a Roman was, I mean, they were back in Rome. They were the authorities. They were the people most people didn't like. And Mark was writing to them, and we'll explain why in a moment. Now, Luke was different. Luke wasn't an eyewitness either, but he actually was essentially hired. He was commissioned by a guy named Theophilus to write a story of Jesus, because we want people to know about this Evangelion, this good news. And so Luke was commissioned to write a story. And the book, the Gospel of Luke says, you know, to you, most excellent Theophilus, he writes the story of what happened. And Luke was a doctor. He wasn't specifically an eyewitness to all the things, but he was a doctor and he had a very detailed perspective and he interviewed people. And that's where the Gospel of Luke came from. And because of that, it was written to Gentiles, which means non-Jewish people. Now, Romans were also Gentiles, but it was written to non-Jewish people. And so he was writing in a language that people that weren't Jewish would understand a little bit better, where Matthew was writing in a language. And I don't mean language like they're all writing in the same Greek, but in a using phrases and terms that people understood differently. Like, again, I've said this to you guys before. When I first moved here, and moved to Central Pennsylvania, my mother-in-law told me that I needed to red up a room. And I was looking for paint. Like, I don't understand what it means to red up a room. And that means you get something and turn it red? Does it involve blood? Like, ew. Like, what's going on here? She's like, no, I'll just go into the closet and get the sweeper. And I walk out with a broom. And she's like, what are you doing? You need to red up the room, use the sweeper. What? Because where I'm from in Delaware, I have no idea what red up a room means. And a sweeper is a thing that sweeps. A vacuum is a thing that vacuums. But anyway, so you understand there's like cultural references and things that are different. And so Matthew was writing to things that Jewish people would understand. Luke was writing to things that Gentiles, meaning non-Jewish people, would understand. And then John, now John is interesting. John is one of the disciples, and we'll get to this in a moment. I have to go faster. One of the disciples of Jesus, and he was an eyewitness. But the interesting thing about the Gospel of John is that it was written at the end of his life. He lived a long life following Jesus, and he's writing his perspective on Jesus as a wise Christ follower. So he's kind of been there, done that, and writing from this perspective of love, and just it's just beautiful. And John wrote his gospel to everyone. It was written to all. It was for everybody that anybody wanted to read could read it. If you were Jewish, you would understand it. If you were Gentile, you would understand it. If you were Roman, you would understand it. It was kind of for everybody. And so they wrote, because of their background and how they wrote, they also had different audiences. And so Matthew was written to Jews, Matthew portrayed Jesus, because they were the story of Jesus, he portrayed Jesus as the king. He was the king with a capital K. And Jewish people, and you would read this in your Bible, knew him as the Messiah, the Mashiach. That's the Hebrew word. The Old Testament was referring to this one that would come. The Mashiach, the one, the anointed one that would make it right. And that was the Hebrew word. The Greek word, because the New Testament was written in Greek, the same word, anointed one, Mashiach, Christos, Christ. And so Jesus Christ isn't Jesus' last name. They're like, Mr. Christ, table for two. Like, no, that was his title. He was Jesus the Christ, the Messiah. And so you're going to see all sorts of references to the kingdom. You're going to see references to the Old Testament. You're going to see references to Moses and the law, because Jewish people grew up knowing all of that. And so even at the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew, it starts with a genealogy, which is the story of where Jesus comes from. And it goes all the way back to Abraham. Because if you remember, actually, we just talked about this. a couple of weeks ago, that God said to Abraham, you know, through you, all the nations will be blessed. The entire world will be blessed. And that one is Jesus. And so Matthew's like, hey, I want to show you how this Jesus ties all the way back. He is the Messiah. He is the King. He is the one that was predicted. Now, Mark was written to Romans and to people that weren't near Israel. They weren't around. And his job was to say, hey, we need to tell this story because people, you know, everybody in Israel knew the story of Jesus. You know, everybody in that land. But the people back in Rome, they didn't know. It's like, we need to get this out there. And so he wrote to the Romans. But if you remember, the Romans, as I said earlier, they were a dominant empire. Like, everything about the Romans was violence and oppression and put you down. And so Mark's writing to these people and said, I want to show you a different way. And so as you read through the Gospel of Mark, you're going to see a lot of references to Jesus as a servant. He wasn't a dominating force. He didn't beat people down. He could have, and we'll get to that later in the series. But he was a servant to all. And so Mark was recording him that way. Now Luke was writing, he was a doctor. He was writing to Gentiles, to non-Jewish people. And if he was like to non-Jewish people say, hey, Jesus is the Mashiach, they'd be like, I don't know what that means. I don't care. So he said, the way he wrote was that Jesus was a perfect human. What does it mean to be perfect? Are you perfect? Because Jesus was a perfect human. And when he took your place on the cross, he gave you his perfection. And he talked in a way that people that weren't Jewish understood this perfect. Yeah, I get that. I know what imperfect humans are. I'm around them all the time. I see one in the mirror every day. But Jesus was a perfect human. And then finally, John was writing to everyone. And his perspective was that Jesus is God. He wanted everyone to understand this isn't just a good teacher. This wasn't just a neat man. This wasn't just a guy that happened to do some miracle things or accidentally predicted things. He was, in fact, is, in fact, God. And that's going to matter because when we get to the end of the series, like, it's a big deal because John isn't going. I mean, the Gospels all count. They all matter. And they're all a big deal. But John is not just writing as, like, yeah, I heard about. John is writing as, I was there. And I'm at the end of my life, and I still believe it, because he is God. And he has transformed me, and he has transformed the world. So, when you look at that, you've got these four gospel authors and four gospel audiences, but of course, one gospel message, because they're all about Jesus. And that he came to die on the cross, to take the sin that we couldn't take, the punishment for the sin that we couldn't take, to give us his righteousness simply through belief. And again, we'll come back to that in a few weeks as we continue with this series. But the other thing I wanted you to know, so you got four gospel authors, four gospel messages, audiences, one gospel message. But I want to talk about this term that you might hear, especially if you like go start reading your Bible or study Bibles or things like that. You might hear the term synoptics. And there are three synoptics. And the synoptics are the synoptic gospels. And if you look at that word, you're probably aware of two parts of that. A synonym is something that is what? A word that is similar. Yeah, it's not a simile, but it is something that is the same. It is the same idea. The word literally means with or along with. And then optic. Does anybody know what the word optic means? Eyes, having to do with our eyes. And so what the synoptics are they the same eyes. They are the same, pretty much the same view. And the synoptic gospels are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Because you're going to find a lot of things, and I left it in my office, I should have brought it down, I'll bring it next week. You're going to find a lot of things that are similar, like exact stories, exact phrases, exact things. Interestingly enough, the feeding of the 5,000, for example, where Jesus fed the 5,000, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, that is the only miracle that is recorded in all four Gospels. So just to give you a perspective, most of the things you see in the Synoptics, you do not see in John. Most of the things you see in John, you do not see in the Synoptics. Was John wrong by saying there was a drum kit? No. Why? Because he had a different perspective. So it doesn't change the value. And so those are called the Synoptics. And I was going to bring down, I have a thing called a harmony of the Gospels, which basically takes all the stories and lines them up in columns. And here's how Matthew recorded it. Here's how Mark recorded it. Here's how Luke recorded it. And again, for most of the time, you don't have four columns. Most of the time, there's three or one or maybe a couple, because not all the synoptics are exactly the same. You get to the feeding of 5,000, there are four columns. When you get to Jesus on the cross, there are four columns because they're all recording that story. So that's the synoptics. That's just to give you some why we're looking at through the eyes of John rather than the eyes of Matthew, Mark, or Luke. Because he had a different perspective. And again, he wrote I don't want to say this, I meant this in a good way. He wrote as a wise old man. Like that grandfather maybe you have, or that friend that you're like, they have lived a long life. What is it that I can learn from you? How can I glean from you? What is it that you have in your great wisdom? And that's where John was writing from that perspective. The other thing that is important is that you've got three synoptics. You also have one disciple Jesus loved. Now, John, as you'll see throughout this story, John, he liked himself. And John, through the Gospel of John, refers to the disciples by their names. But any time he refers to himself, he doesn't say me, he doesn't say I, he doesn't say John. He says the disciple Jesus loved. So you've got that phrase a lot of times, and anytime you see the disciple Jesus loved, or the disciple, and I want you to understand here, it almost seems like there's an arrogance here, but I think it's a wise man going, he loved me. He even loved me. Like, I don't know Matthew, Mark, or what they've done, or what their thoughts are, but I know me, and I was a disciple that Jesus loved. And so there's a beauty in that. And you'll see also he's a good runner. We'll get to that in a couple of weeks. But he refers to himself as a disciple Jesus loved, or the disciple. So when you see that phrase in the Gospel of John, he's referring to John, to himself in this story. The other things you need to know about John, and this is just about this disciple Jesus loved, he and his brother James were the sons of Zebedee. Zebedee was their dad. And they were also called the sons of thunder because it seemed like James and John were a bit blustery. They were a bit kind of like in your face. They were a bit obnoxious. They were that way when they were younger. And John, again, he's a wise old man at this point. But they're also the ones, if you remember, kind of their blustery, their oomph, their thunder. They were the ones where their mom said, "Hey, Jesus, I want you to make sure my sons are at the place of honor at your right and your left." And Jesus is like, okay, that's not my job, and that's pretty arrogant. And the disciples were pretty upset about it. The rest of them were like, who do you think you are? And it was that whole idea of saying, no, we're going to serve. If you want to be the master, you need to be the slave. If you want to be the one in charge, you need to be the one that serves. If you want to be first, you need to be last. And so that's where that phrase comes. But James and John were the ones going like, hey, we want the seats. We want the best seats in the house right next to the king. The other thing we see is that Jesus was also... John was also known as one of the what they call the inner three, the inner circle or the three. Many times you see in all the Gospels, you'll see Jesus kind of going away separately a little bit with Peter, James, and John. And Peter, James, and John, and John is one of those three. They were there on the Mount of Transfiguration where they got to see Jesus in his glory, and they got to see Moses and Elijah there. And so John was even privy. He was aware of, he was of very specific details that even the rest of the 12 disciples didn't know. So all that to say is that we're looking at four different accounts that John sees that the synoptics didn't see. And you'll see in a moment, they all recorded them, but John's recording some specific perspectives, and it gives us just a beautiful picture into Jesus. And into this man who isn't just like, yeah, I heard about him, or isn't just someone that says, yeah, here, let me write this down real quick. This is a man that got to the end of his life and said, oh, Jesus is wonderful. Jesus is God. Jesus loves me, even me. And Jesus loves you. And so it's just a beautiful perspective. So, going to the point for this week. The point is that John saw through his eyes that Jesus recognized betrayal. See, John saw something, and you'll see in a moment, that he saw that Jesus recognized betrayal in a way that the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, did not see, did not record. And so what we have here is a public confession and a private conversation. So we're going to be in John chapter 13. If you have the YouVersion app, John is the fourth gospel in your New Testament. It's your, 39, 40, 41, 42, 40, it's the 43rd book of the Bible. But we're going to be in John chapter 13. And what we see in John chapter 13 is what we is what I'm calling the confession of Jesus. Now, to be clear, confession, we've kind of equated that automatically in our world with like, oh, sin or something wrong. I have to confess. Well, confess just means admitting something. It doesn't mean you've done something wrong or sinful. So do not get the idea here that Jesus is confessing his sin, because Jesus never sinned. He never sinned. He wasn't even capable of sin. But we've got this moment here that you are probably familiar with, because it's popular. We've talked about it here multiple times. We participated in it just a couple weeks ago. We walked through all of it during the Churchianity series. Leonardo da Vinci drew a picture of it, a painting of it. And we call it the Last Supper. And this is the moment which is in the what's called the upper room. There was this, because it was two floors of a house, and it was the upper one. That's why it's called that. And the disciples were there celebrating the Seder meal, which was a Jewish meal. And I don't have time to get into all that. You can find that at MC or on our Churchianity 101, or just talk to someone around you. But they're in the Seder meal. And this is, Jesus had just finished, earlier in this chapter, had just finished washing the disciples' feet. And he said, you know, I'm serving you, and you're going to serve one another. Because I want you to do that. This is an example of service. And he says that, you know, all of you are clean. You don't, you know, and I don't need to get into all of it. But he was basically saying, I'm not going to wash all of you, although one of you are unclean. And they were kind of like, okay, that's weird, whatever, Jesus. And then he goes on in verse 18 here. And he says, I am not saying these things to all of you. He says, I know the ones I have chosen, but this fulfills what that the scripture that says, the one who eats my food has turned against me. And this is a quote from David in Psalm 41. And it's a prophecy of Jesus now. And Jesus is saying that someone who eats my food has turned against me. Okay, Jesus, thanks. He goes on and says, I tell you, and he's talking to the 12 now. We're in the upper room with just 12 disciples. So there are 13 people there. He says, I tell you this beforehand so that when it happens, you will believe that I am the Messiah. And so Jesus is making a statement here. I'm telling you something now because it's not going to make sense right now. But later you're going to go, he said that and it happened. He says, so that you believe that I am the Messiah. I tell you the truth. Anyone who welcomes my messenger is welcoming me. And anyone who welcomes me is welcoming the Father who sent me. And I'm not going to talk about that right now, just to keep moving on with the story. It says, now Jesus was deeply troubled, and he exclaimed, and here is this confession, if you will. Here's this thing he admits. He says, I tell you the truth. One of you will betray me. He says, one of you is going to betray me. And again, we're not talking about, we're not even talking about a crowd this big. We're not talking about a dinner party in your house. We're talking about the inner circle, the 12 disciples that followed Jesus for 3 years of his life. Like, these are the committed ones. And, of course, we know, and that's going to mess up your perspective on this right now, because we know who he's talking about. But they didn't. And imagine if you consider yourself a follower of Jesus. Or just imagine that you have a close friend or a family member, and they're like, oh, you're going to betray me. Like, no, I'm not. Why would I do that? And this is what Jesus says. He says, one of you is going to betray me. So he makes this confession. He shares this publicly with all 12 in the room. Well, 13 counting himself. With all 12 in the room. And so that's the confession of Jesus. But then it moves on to, which makes sense, the confusion of the disciples. Because now these 12 disciples are in the room going, wait, me? Not me. I don't. What? Who's going to betray? Who's going to betray this guy? Why would we do this? We've been following you for 13 years, or yeah, for 3 years. Not 13. We've been following you for 3 years. Why would we do this? And so it goes on here in verse 22 of John 13. It says the disciples looked at each other, wondering whom he could mean. Who is this? And the word wonder here is really just this idea of shock and like, what? And again, we know the end, so we're not as shocked. But if we were in that room, we'd be like, who would do this? Who would do this? And it says, the disciple Jesus loved, so therefore he's talking about John. John was sitting next to Jesus at the table. Simon Peter motioned to him. So Peter, like one of the inner three, was clearly not sitting next to Jesus. And so he motioned to John and said, "Who's he talking about? Ask him who he's talking about." Everybody else is going, "Who, me? What, you? Is he gonna, I don't, what?" You know, it's that old Spider-Man meme. They're all pointing at each other and like, "Who, what, who's going to do this? I don't know. Hey, John, ask him. Ask him who it is." And said, so that disciple leaned over to Jesus and asked, "Lord, who is it?" And again, we know the story, we know what's happening, but they didn't. And so he leans over and asks Jesus, because he's clearly, if he's next to Jesus, that's a place of honor, interestingly enough. And he leans over to Jesus and says, "Who is it?" So now we are breaking away from the synoptics, because Matthew, Mark, and Luke record the upper room. They record the Jesus confession of the betrayal. But what we see now is not included, because John was there. John was in this moment. And so the disciples are confused, and then it goes on to finally to the conversation with John. And it seems here, based on some phrasing, some of the Greek words, and I don't want to sound all fancy like that, but it seems here that this was not a public statement, that this was something that Jesus said privately to John in this moment. And so it goes on in verse 26, it says, Jesus responded. Now he's not talking to the room. He's talking to John, because, the way the word is phrased, the Greek, is that they leaned back to talk. And that's the way they sat. They leaned. They didn't have chairs and tables like we do. Everything was kind of on a cushion on the floor. And so they kind of leaned back and had this conversation. And Jesus responded, "It is the one to whom I give the bread I dip in the bowl." And again, Jesus recorded that in the synoptics, or it was recorded in the synoptics, but didn't say that he was going to give to. And it says when he had dipped it, he gave it to Judas, son of Simon Iscariot. When Judas had eaten the bread, Satan entered into him. Now, just that phrase there doesn't mean suddenly he like grew horns and his eyes went red and he turned his neck all the way around 360. Like, it had nothing to do with that. It was actually John records earlier that Satan was already involved in Judas's life. But now this was kind of like, and now he pushed him over the edge. Now we're in the final step. We're in the big deal, in the big picture there. And so Satan entered into him, and it says, then Jesus told him, Judas, "Hurry and do what you're going to do." And it says, none of the others at the table knew what Jesus meant. None of the others at the table knew what Jesus meant. And so Jesus makes this statement and tells him, John, the disciple he loved, and said, it's going to be this guy. And the other guys just saw him dipping bread and giving it to Judas, and they're like, oh, okay, cool, Jesus is sharing, yay. Not Sharon, sharing. He didn't change his name. Anyway, it says, so Judas, none of them knew what that meant. So since Judas was their treasurer, some thought Jesus was telling him to go and pay for the food or to give some money to the poor. So Judas left at once, going out into the night. And what's interesting, and we can't see this, and again, I don't mean to make it all sound complicated, but in English we can't quite see this, but the way the Greek was phrased here is that this is John, wise old John, saying, kind of explaining. He's like, hey, this is what some of the guys thought. Like, nobody knew at the time what was going on. I knew what was happening, but since he was the treasurer, everybody was like, well, maybe he's going to pay for the food, or maybe he's giving money to the poor. Like, that's kind of his job. And so he left. And so nobody really understood completely, except that John has this moment. John has this moment in this conversation where he realizes, wait a second. And he doesn't get it completely. And we're going to see this story is going to build over the next 3 weeks after today. But John's like, wait a second. You knew you were going to be betrayed. And it wasn't just this generic, yeah, somebody's probably going to hurt me someday. It was Judas is going to betray me. Judas is going to betray me. And John saw this. John saw that Jesus recognized his betrayal. That's the point for this week. Because from John's perspective, and again, look at it from John's perspective, he's like, wait a second, Jesus. This guy, this is one of us. This isn't one of them. This is us. This is our friend group. This is our circle. This is our... These are our people. And you know who it's going to be, and you're going to let it happen? Like, just wonder, what are the thoughts going through John's mind here, going, Jesus, why would you, if you knew who it was going to be, and if you knew it was one of your close friends, if you knew it was one of these followers that have been with us for the last 3 years, why would you allow this to happen? Why don't you stop him? And again, John didn't say these things, and we don't know, but this is this perspective of going, wait a second. And John's the only one that knew this, that Judas was going to betray him. And I think what this brings in my mind as I consider this passage, and we're going to keep building on John's story. But I think John was like, wait a second. Following Jesus, this Jesus, the way he's doing things, that's not easy. That Jesus, he could have just, nope, Judas, you're not going to betray me. It's all good. But there was something else going on here. There was a bigger perspective, and Jesus was willing to submit to betrayal, even though they didn't quite believe it yet. And next week we'll get into that even more, like slightly spoiler, but when they're on the cross, they still expected Jesus not to actually die there when he's on the cross. But John saw that Jesus recognized betrayal. And as I look at this, I'm like, okay, does he see something here going, wow, he knew this, and yet he went through with it. He knew that he was going to be betrayed by a close friend, and yet he allowed it to happen. And I think there's something about this where John can see that Jesus' way is difficult. That the way of Jesus is not easy. That the way of Jesus is not simple. It's not always happy. It doesn't make us feel good all the time. Sometimes it's going to be difficult. And if Jesus is our example, maybe it's going to be hard for us too. Because sometimes it takes pain to create gain. Sometimes the hard way is the best way. And we're going to, again, be building on this. So, like, if you're not here next week, check it online, watch the live stream, whatever, because we're not ending on a happy note today. But the Jesus way is difficult. And so when we go into following Jesus, we need to recognize, sort of like John did, like, you know what? Maybe this isn't as easy as I thought it would be. Jesus allowed himself to be betrayed, and he knew exactly who it was. And sometimes I have here, you know, we get the idea that everything is easy. When we follow Jesus, everything's going to be easy. Or we think that everything should be easy. And you're like, no, I don't feel that way. I know, okay. But here's how we really feel, right? When things get hard, we blame Jesus. We blame God. God, why am I going through this difficult thing? God, why would you allow this to happen? God, how can this be? How come you don't care? How come you don't love me? And somehow we've got this idea that Jesus' way was easy. That Jesus was like, oh, yeah. Oh, nobody's going to betray me. Oh, and by the way, that cross thing, I'm not going to go to a cross. That's so hurtful. Let's just be happy together and go to hell together. Because without the cross, there is no hope. And we've got this idea that maybe Jesus' way is supposed to be easy for us. And I just want to clarify for us that Jesus' way is difficult. And if you're not sure, there's some, and we're going to get to hope. There's this difficult, this pain leads to gain. There's a good thing. But sometimes there's hurt and hard in the process. And the first thing that we can see here, this is from John's own words in John chapter 16, is that we should plan on pain. John records Jesus saying this. In case you weren't sure, that if you think, no, following Jesus is supposed to be easy, it's supposed to be, once I trust Jesus, my life will be good, I'll be rich, I'll have all the things I want, I'll never get sick, whatever. But that's really not what it's supposed to be. And John records Jesus saying this. He says, I have told you these things so that you may have peace, which is weird that he says this is for peace, but there's a good thing in it. In this world, you will have trouble. He says, you're going to have trouble. It's going to be difficult if you're following me. It is not going to be easy. And he gives the teaser as well, the spoiler, saying, but take heart. Because I have overcome the world. Because this world isn't the end. And we can deal with difficult now because there's something better. We can pick things up and put them back down now because later it's going to mean a healthier person. We can get on a bike and go nowhere because it's going to help our heart so that we can live a longer life. We can do these things, hard things now, because there's something better. But Jesus says, plan on pain. If you're into this thing going, oh, it's going to be easy, it's going to be fun, it's always going to go my way, I'm going to get all the jobs that I want, I'm going to get the money that I want, my family's going to be perfect, my kids are always going to obey me, and it's always going to work out, you're not really paying attention to Jesus. Because he says, plan on pain. Plan on pain. The second thing, and doesn't get much better, is prepare for persecution. And we looked at a video about this during the Stuck series a couple months ago. It was a Craig Rochelle video. I was out of town, I think, that weekend. And in John 15, John records this. This is Jesus speaking. He says, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. So if we call ourselves Christ followers or Christians or little Christ, and if Jesus was hated, if Jesus was persecuted, and we follow Jesus, then we should expect the same thing. He says, if you belong to the world, it would love you as own. If you were just like everyone else, if you were that way, yeah, you'd be fine. You cannot follow Jesus, and things will go pretty well for you right now. You're going to regret some things later when you get to the end of your life. He says, but as it is, you don't belong to the world. But I have chosen you out of the world, and that's why the world hates you. He says, the people around you are going to hate you. It doesn't mean you need to hate back. Not what Jesus is saying. He says, remember what I told you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. This idea of you're going to be persecuted. And Paul writes this to Timothy as a young pastor, his second letter he wrote to him, and said, Timothy, here's some things you need to know. He said, by the way, in fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. If you are trying to live for Jesus, you will be persecuted. People will mock you. People will tear you apart. There'll be problems. We even talked about this in the New Sensations Fifth Sunday event last week. That was one of the questions about persecution. And I remember in that video, Craig Rochelle said, get this, if you're not being persecuted, that should raise some questions about how much you're following Jesus. Because he says, Paul says, everyone that wants to live a godly life in Jesus will be persecuted. So if you're just blending in, maybe there's some issues there. But Jesus' way is difficult. And we need to plan on pain. And I'm not saying it's always going to be painful. But don't be surprised if there's a pain. We need to prepare for persecution. Like, it is going to happen if we're following Jesus. He is our example. We follow him. We are going to be like him. And then finally, and this is kind of where it brings it all together, is count the cost. And this is the reality check for all of us. Because if it's going to be painful, if there is going to be persecution, if John is looking at Jesus going, you knew, and you could have stopped him, and you didn't, so why not? Maybe there's a purpose here. Maybe there's pain. Maybe difficulty has a purpose. And Jesus says in Luke chapter 14 to count the cost. And we talked about this during the Drastic series a couple years ago. You can find that on our website as well. It's also on the slideshow loop. But it says a large crowd was following Jesus. A lot of people were following him. And he turned around and said to them, he's like, whoa, wait, you guys are all following me because it's cool, because it's popular, because I'm healing people and I'm miracling them. That's a thing. He says, if you want to be my disciple, you must, by comparison, hate everyone else, your father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters. Yes, even your own life. Otherwise, you can't be my disciple. He says, if you're not ready to follow me and you're not ready to give up everything else, you're not really following me. You're kind of like, I'm mostly following you, but I'm following Jesus as well. But then he goes on and says, but if there's going to be persecution, if it's going to cost you to give up everything, if there's going to be pain, if it's going to be a problem, he says, but don't begin until you count the cost. He's like, know what you're getting into. Know what you're getting into. This is not going to be easy. He says, for who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone will laugh at you. They would say, there's the person who started that building and couldn't even afford to finish it. He's like, you're going to plan for something. You would plan for that. You would plan for construction, for doing a project. You can see, can I afford this new car? Can I afford this new thing? He says, do the same when it comes to follow me. Are you sure you want to get into this? Because it's not always going to be easy. He goes on and says, what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether an army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 marching against him? Hey, there's people coming. There's a battle starting. There's a battle coming. Can we win? Okay, if we can't, he will send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. Why? Because we're not going to get into something we can't get through. If an army is coming, we're not going to try to fight them if we know we're going to lose. He says, so you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. Jesus says, look, it's difficult. My way is difficult. My way is hard. You need to plan on pain. You need to prepare for persecution. And then you need to count the cost. Is this really something you want to get into? Now, I will say, as Sean Fitch, and I think John would say at the end of his life writing the Gospel of John, it is very hard. It's so worth it. But absolutely worth it. Because of what Jesus offers. Because not of now, but because of then. Because of the hope for eternity. Because of the peace that we have through that. Jesus said, you're going to experience trouble. Take heart, I have overcome the world. He says, I say this to you so you'll have peace. You can have peace in the middle of the hard times. Paul talks about pray and the peace that doesn't make any sense, which transcends all understanding, is going to guard your heart and mind. Because John saw that Jesus recognized betrayal. John saw that this was going to be difficult. So, you've got on your seat, if you don't have one, there should be one around you. Go to the next element there. Not that. Keep going to the other thing. The next thing down on the... There we go. We're doing a thing each week of this series called Through My Eyes. We've been looking through the eyes of John. But we're looking through my eyes. And we're giving each of us a chance to process what John is seeing and what we are experiencing, how that looks for us. And by the way, if there isn't a card around you, Chris is in the back there with some extras. If you need a pen, just kind of put your hand up. He'll get one for you. But I want you to consider, what does it look like through your eyes? And the card that you have there says this. It says, through my eyes, Jesus' way is difficult. And he is calling me to... And what I want you to do is, you know, if today mattered, if John's perspective matters, if Jesus' perspective matters, what is it that's difficult that God is calling you to do? What is that thing? What is it that God wants you to do? Is there a person that you need to talk to that you've been avoiding? Is there a situation that you need to enter into that you've been staying out of? Is there something you've been doing that you need to stop doing? Because you were doing it for the sake of comfort. And so what I want you to do, just for a few minutes, ask God, what is God telling you? What is the difficult thing he's calling you to do? And then once you've got that, don't put your name on it. Once you've got that, while Jack's playing here, we actually have a thing out in the lobby there with little paper clips. Just clip your card there and do it as an act of prayer. As you put that there, say, God, help me to do this difficult thing. And then come back down, come back and have a seat. And once everyone's had a chance to do that, then I will pray and we will be done for the morning. Would you pray with me? Father, through John's eyes, it must have been difficult to see Jesus' willingness to be betrayed. And maybe he recognized how difficult following you would be. We don't really know what his thoughts were, but we do know that you have said that following Jesus would be difficult, that it would require pain and persecution, and that we should really count the cost and see if we really want to get it. We know what we're getting into and really want to do it. And God, that means that following Jesus is going to be difficult. And I pray for each of the things that we just wrote down, for the things that you have called us individually for the difficult thing that you have called us to do or to say or to be. And I pray that you would help us to do that. And for everyone in the room right now, I'm just going to give you a chance quietly to take a moment to pray and ask God to help you specifically to do the hard thing that he has called you to do. Take about 10 seconds and just say, Jesus, help me to do whatever it is you wrote on your paper. Jesus, we want to thank you for giving us that nudge to do this difficult thing, and I pray that you would help us to do it, whether we meet a reminder later in the week or later today or on our way home, to be able to do that difficult thing. And God, I thank you so much that Jesus took the difficult path and didn't make everything easy, because if he made everything easy, we would be without hope for eternity. Thank you for taking the hard way. Thank you for being betrayed to the cross to take our sin. And I pray that you would help us to trust you in the hard moments. And thank you that we're going to have trouble, but we can take heart and have peace in you because you've overcome all of it. And that now isn't the end, but eternity is. Thank you for that hope that we have in Jesus. It's in his name we pray. Amen.